recording, and this is Out Now with Aaron and Abe. I am Aaron, and Abe is he's in detention. Out Now is normally a podcast where Abe and I discuss new movies weekly. However, every now and then, like these special bonus episodes, whether it's one of our fun commentary tracks or something completely different, and this is our commentary track for February 2026, and we are continuing our themed commentaries for the next few months, which is Teenage Wasteland, where we're talking about some iconic high school slash teenager centric films from various decades. We started in the 70s with American Graffiti last month, and now we're moving on to the 1980s, and we'll be talking today John Hughes's The Breakfast Club. That's right. And joining me to discuss The Breakfast Club, we have host of The Brandon Peters Show, Barry Manilow, does in fact raid his wardrobe. It's Brandon Peters.
Hello. Good tidings to all.
Also joining us for the Milky Way Blues, his screws fall out all the time because the world is an imperfect place. It's Yancey Burns.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
It's going well. How are you both doing tonight?
Good.
Doing good.
All right.
Looking for, I like this Teenage Wasteland idea.
Yep.
Yeah. I'm excited to where it takes us today and in the months ahead. But, yeah.
I'm glad we talked you out of Porky's, but, you know.
There's just not enough Jewish representation, and somehow Porky's is one of the few of the 80s. Such a weird thing. Remember how there's a whole Jewish plot in we don't need to talk about Porky's. there's like, this guy's anti-Semitic. We had a fight. Now we're friends. It's over. That's the extent of the plot in Porky's. Okay, let's talk about The Breakfast Club. Let's do that. What we're going to do here, the three of us currently have the movie on pause. We're all also watching it at different places for a change. Brandon, I believe, has the Criterion. I'm watching it on Prime. Yancey, how are you watching the movie?
Just my own personal library copy.
Okay, so normally we'd give you an exact time point, but since there's a lot of ways to watch The Breakfast Club out there, we have it paused at the Universal logo, as in the classic Universal logo that accompanies the actual film. It's where the words Universal and MCA Company appear on screen right when they plop down on top of the globe. So if you plan to watch this movie and listen to us talk at the same time, pause it right around there at the beginning and press play on the sound of go, and we start all talking. If you're listening just to listen, you are good. You just sit there, and don't you forget about us. Make sure to press play on the thing. All right. We good? We good to go?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right, let's do this.
Just so people know, the pause button, if you paused it, is the two vertical lines that are parallel to each other, sometimes accompanied by the word pause.
Two white stripes.
Yep.
It's always... Historically, there's always been two white stripes.
Yes.
It's our countdown music.
All right, let's start this thing. My thing is because you paused me, now I have to like reset my thing because I went to the wallpaper. Hold on. Okay. All right. On the sound of go. 3, 2, 1, go.
Okay.
Begins.
All right, I gotta turn this up.
Hey.
We get a David Bowie quote.
Not yet.
Okay. The Breakfast Club.
Yep.
1985.
Breakfast Club, but they eat lunch.
Yeah, they don't actually have breakfast in this film. It's one of those, you know, it's like Fargo. It takes place in Brainerd. One of those.
I guess it starts in the morning. But
presumably,
kind of a political thing, isn't it? The Breakfast Club. It's a Washington term for like a political group that meets up and changes their shoes or whatever.
That might be all well and good, but the original title was The Lunch Bunch.
Oh, was it really?
Yes. And then they also consider Library Revolution.
Those titles
suck.
Library Revolution is really bad.
That's bad. Lunch Bunch sounds like a Saturday morning, like
a Saturday morning cartoon.
Yeah.
Library Revolution sounds like the person trying to like knock off the Breakfast Club.
Yeah, exactly.
And trying to be witty with the title,
or like the essay of somebody.
Somebody's 11th grade essay about the Breakfast Club would be like
Library Revolution.
Library Revolution.
Okay, this is Hughes's second film. Going after 16 Candles, not counting anything that he's written, just movies that he's directed himself. It's interesting.
Yeah, because starts with Vacation, right? That's his big breakout.
That's it. No, Mr. Mom.
Mom, okay.
But yeah, certainly has an extensive resume when it comes to all of the films that he's either written or produced.
Quote from Changes.
Changes. Is it Changes or Heroes?
It's Changes.
Okay.
Which is specifically about young people, so it makes sense.
How's that glass breaking? Is that like a rear projection in the back? Or like...
That's an 80s. That's an 80s yeah. thing.
The 80s I get like the tableau. Like, is it, but like, do you just do that on camera in front of this high school, or is it just.
They built an enormous David Bowie lyric. and then Judd Nelson threw a rock at it.
Yeah. Judd, can you handle this? I got it.
That, the high school, the front of the high school looks like the type of like. Building and stuff that would be in a sci-fi setting, like early mid 70s of like the conquest of the Planet of the Apes or something like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you point that high school, the exterior of the high school is different from the interior. They're two different high schools, but the interior is the same one used in Ferris Bueller's Day Off, which he was shooting simultaneously with this movie, which is
really
wild to think because Weird Science comes out in between this and Ferris Bueller.
Wow.
And I'm like, when did he shoot Weird Science? Was my main like thought that I had while reading
before
that.
Before this, I guess that's wild.
I guess before, right? Yeah, like
I feel like Anthony Michael Hall looks older in Weird Science, but I could just be
that would make sense because during the filming of this movie, he grows like a foot.
Yeah,
so, right.
Like I believe the trivia is he's before the movie started, he was shorter than Judd Nelson, and after they finished filming, they started in March, they finished in May. In May, he was taller than Judd Nelson. Like he had a giant growth spurt. all right. There's Diet Roy Scheider as Molly Ringwald's father right there.
Ginger Scheider.
Ginger Scheider. okay, so The Breakfast Club. This movie. This comes out a year before I was born, so obviously I didn't see it in theaters. But by the way, Anthony Michael Hall, that's his real mother and sister that are in the car with him. Yancey.
Yeah.
When did you first see The Breakfast Club?
I first saw this movie the way I would have seen a lot of movies I wasn't necessarily dying to see first run, meaning I probably saw this the week it debuted on HBO or whatever channel it debuted on, along with everyone else in my seventh grade class. Because I remember this was an instant hit at my school, and everybody thought they were the Judd Nelson character. All the sort of anybody who was a bully or a class clown immediately started acting explicitly like the Judd Nelson character.
They felt seen.
So I was put off a bit by the fact that everyone took this movie so seriously and that everyone wanted to act like their 12-year-old problems were so intense. It took me a lot of years to come around to really kind of liking it a lot more. But when I first saw it, it would have been just something probably before school on HBO.
So it did have that kind of popularity in high school. So it really clicked in that way.
It really, really. I went to high school in the South Bay of Los Angeles, and it really, really clicked. Everyone had seen it right away, and everyone sort of it had just been ingested into everyone's psyche overnight.
I would say, while 16 Candles was like a big hit and a breakout, this was the one that connected with the most people, and was probably bigger, the biggest. Fair enough. Of all the Brat Pack Hughes things, this is probably the one.
I think kids definitely saw themselves a lot in this movie, which is to its credit.
The gigantic fucking library.
So the library is modeled after the library that's inside the school they're shooting in, but it was too small for them to film, so they rebuilt this library in the gymnasium of the same school. So it is larger by design because they wanted more dynamic ways to shoot the film.
Yeah.
You're not wrong calling out it's a huge library because it is for a high school.
Yeah. Like I mean, college, I'd be like, yeah.
Just to wrap up, Yancy, so you're saying that initially you're like okay on it, now you've grown to like it more. Is that where you're at with it?
When I was I was younger, I suppose, than the age it was being pitched to, but when I was a kid, I thought that it was, too self-important, but as an adult, I realized that teenagers are sort of self-important and that this does sort of represent the way people feel at this age. They sort of feel more intense feelings than they ever do any other time in their life, maybe. And they've sort of, their self-consciousness is huge and their involvement is huge. So it later rang true to me, you know?
Fair enough. Brandon, same question. When did you first see The Breakfast Club?
I think I saw it in middle school, rented it. These were, I think one, a friend showed it to me actually, probably I rented it and, I've always long said that like teen movies for me were the Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street, Halloween sequels and slasher stuff. I really wasn't watching these teen comedies. And they didn't like, they weren't on like repeat in my household. I think I saw Breakfast Club maybe one or two times. Enjoyed it. So some of the other giant, I saw Weird Science. I didn't see 16 Candles for like the longest time, but
I just saw it this year.
Oh, really?
Or last year, yeah.
Gotcha. Who do you approve of more, 16 Candles or Revenge of the Nerds? In their,
Nerds is a little more over.
Anthony
rapey.
Michael Hall or Carradine?
Nerds is a little more skin crawly.
It's overtly rapey, where 16 Candles is like innocent.
Yeah. But yeah, I at my time, it wasn't the, like, I can totally get like where the bullies or whatever pick up on the Judd Nelson. In my time, like the alternative, like, or rebel crowd thought he was cool.
Sure.
But, you know, I knew of Molly Ringwald. She was like the it girl of the 80s. But in the 90s, she like, I don't know, like her film career didn't just like, you know, she aged out of the roles the only people wanted to see her in, apparently. Right. But like she was starting to do like she did like a softcore movie in like the 90s or something.
Malevolent or Malicious or something like that.
Something. Yeah. And that's, yeah, that was like her turn. And it's like, oh, Molly Ringwald. But
yeah, she was also like, she was considered for Scream, for Nev Campbell's role in Scream and stuff like that. But she didn't go her way.
So. She was just enormous for a few years there. Mm-hmm. And you can sort of see that she doesn't seem to suggest like she's that. I don't want to say she seems limited as an actress, but she does the pouting teenage, sort of likable teenage girl very, very well. I think John Hughes was just completely the reason for her success and her biggest, you know, champion.
Sure.
He really saw something in her.
Wasn't just her, you know, acting. It was a style icon for the moment too.
Yeah, girls, definitely.
And I think it was like the, she spoke to like many different factions of girl, like the popular preppy girls wanted to be like down and earthly like her more. And when, you know, they weren't really that type of person, but, kind of seeing themselves in her.
Right.
But even though in this movie she's supposed to be that, she doesn't look like your typical girl that you would use in the 80s at this time for this role.
It's funny
because
she's
not blonde.
All three things out in like the three like key Ringwald Hughes films, right? Because she's from the wrong side of the tracks in Pretty in Pink, right? She's like the dummy,
right?
The artsy girl that has a poor family. Then she's like, yeah, she's in 16 Candles, she's like looked over but still like an object of desire for some people, and here she's like the popular girl. Like,
yeah,
right. She seems like a real teenager. She really was able to,
mm-hmm.
at least the movie version of that.
Yeah.
Whereas Anthony Michael Hall, I think, is already playing a different kind of. He's not going for a realistic teenager at all. Really, I would say he's already sort of playing it for laughs.
He's going for a teenager in this that's like, I mean, when you get to the revelation and stuff about him, that's feels like ahead of its time.
More, yeah.
It doesn't feel like it fits here in the 80s, but it fits in the late 90s and then modern.
Yeah,
even.
There's something that feels, yeah, there's ahead of its time.
When you find out why he's in detention. Yeah, true.
Yeah, it sounds ridiculous when you first saw this movie, but Columbine onward, you're like, oh. Yeah.
Mm. Now, Judd Nelson and Emilio Estevez, those are characters I definitely knew in high school. The problem is these two look like they're 30 years old. So it distracts me because I'm like, Emilio just put on like a varsity jacket. It's like, all right, apparently.
See, like,
this is just screen
like,
vernacular. I mean, Anthony Michael Hall could be a high school kid, but the other ones, you know.
That gets me to mind. Like, I saw this movie initially in like TBS, like that kind of viewing. And so for a long time, I'd watch this movie without the salty language that got it the star rating. Not to say that like completely like takes away for like what this movie is. But I do think watching it in its full, which I eventually did, I want to say sometime in high school, it gives it like a bit more, I don't want to necessarily say edge, but certainly like it feels more complete by being like the full movie, I guess, or like what it's going for.
That's how kids talked, or at least after the movie came out, that's how kids talked.
Compared to Weird Science and Ferris Bueller, which are, you know, they're PG, PG-13, or whatever they are.
Yeah. Weird and 16 Candles.
I hadn't seen 16 Candles, but like, so I hadn't seen it. So Weird Science of Paris before, those are like my point, my like knowing points for Hughes. Cause, and like, yeah, I hadn't seen 16 Candles. I've seen parts of it. I've seen a lot of Pretty in Pink, and just, they didn't interest me, like wanting to keep going. And watching this movie in both, you know, edited for TV form and for the other form, like it just never hits me in the way that I feel like it hits a lot of people. And I don't know if it's because it's because I just don't relate to these characters, or because it feels too stagey and talky in a way that feels unnatural. I don't know what it quite is. I can understand, Yancey, your point, and that's where I do like this movie overall. I just don't love it. But like, hearing you say like it makes sense to have teenagers that speak in a way where their feelings seem like the most important thing in the world, because that's how teenagers feel. That makes a lot. I can connect with that. That registers to me in a way that makes sense. It's just, I don't know, something about the presentation of this never like hits me in the way where I think it's a fantastic movie. I think it's a fine
Well,
movie.
It's not, maybe it's not in the first rank of movies, but
I'm not saying you think it is. I'm just saying, like, I myself would, regardless of what anyone else thinks, I wouldn't put it in as a great movie. I think it's a good movie.
It stands out from the movies that came out around it, for sure, and I think it's the reason that stood out to me, and is that it's a chamber drama, really. It's yes. Five people in a room talking for 90 minutes. There aren't too many other mainstream movies like that from the 80s. A lot of
especially
the movies,
teen.
Yeah, teen, especially teen. I mean, that makes this very different to me than I wasn't into, and still I'm not really into 16 Candles or Ferris Bueller or Weird Science, because those are more on the crass side of things, and he leans more on having every adult character be a total moron, which just never, that fantasy never appealed to me. I'm like, yeah, kids are maybe smarter than the movies make them out to be, but adults aren't stupid. Like, this fantasy world where the adult, like, Ferris Bueller's parents are such idiots, and the principal's such an idiot, and Paul Gleason in this is a bit of an idiot, but I believe him just being a sour sort of administrator character.
He's a bully.
But,
that's what,
But this one stands out more for me from the other teen movies, for its compassionate sincerity. It does remind me a lot in that way of Nicholas Ray's Rebel Without a Cause. It's not as great a film as that. That's a great film, but this is, I think, a very good film, and it is equally marked by genuine compassion for teenagers, which didn't always get, you know, a lot of movies treat teenagers like they're punks, especially from up until this point too. Teenagers are often troubled, and this movie at least treats them like they're human beings. And it shows that the director, who must have been in his 30s, John Hughes at this time, really, really, really identified with teenagers, American teenagers, for some reason.
Yeah. But
that's why this feels like a passion project more than his other movies.
So none of what you said I disagree with. It's just, if it doesn't click, it doesn't click with me. You know, that's what obviously it's different from other teen movies by nature of its structure and what have you. It clearly comes from a filmmaker who has a perspective on things that differs from the way other filmmakers of the time or other studios were treating movies that came down to high school settings or what have you. It's just one that, you know, I just don't, you know, I can't find a deep personal connection with, but it doesn't affect me that other people, you know, connect with it more, register with it more anyway.
It's not, you know, if John Sayles made it, it would be a better movie. If a more, you know, varied, gifted filmmaker had made it, it might have been the kind of thing that you would have responded to. As it is, it still has to be, it still serves as a cool object for teenagers to consume. It's not fully a movie that is just about being compassionate to teenagers. It's also trying to be cool and trying to be, you know, bunch of kids in detention sort of having their hijinks. So, you know, there must be a little bit of a, you had to be there quality to it.
Yeah. Brandon, it's also, I mean, this movie like is a rare thing because it's a full meal actor delight here for young actors here. They get, I mean, it is all just like, you know, like Yancey said, chamber drama, just stuck here chatting. So through what this movie gives, not only is it like, wow, look at all these young performers just, you know, having an opportunity to just go at it for this entire 97 minutes or so. And through that, you're going to learn their darkest secrets. You're going to get a full, well-rounded arc, background, you know, character types, quotes from every single one of these characters. And that's what sticks with people. This movie, unlike the other ones, I mean, this one, I mean, I'm not saying like they're throwing a bunch of shit at a wall and seeing what sticks. There's just so much dialogue that it's easily infinitely quotable just because people would rewatch it and just note the actors, because all it is just acting. There is a little hijinks that happens a little later, but most of this is just drama. And has this ever been turned into a stage play?
I wouldn't be surprised.
I was wondering that myself earlier. It must have been unofficially. I'm certain.
Yeah.
You know, by a million high schools across the country, I'm sure.
Right.
I think I've even heard like readings at like, you know, celebrities like all cast in the role, that kind of thing. I think I've heard that happen at some point. If not, whether or not it's sort of like a comedy for the sake of comedy or for the sake of just doing it to do it, I can't tell you offhand. But.
Now, in terms of if you walked into the theater in 84, who are these five actors? Like, where would you have seen them before? Would you have seen them in anything? Ali Sheedy you would have seen in War Games.
Maybe. Mm-hmm. I got cast on this based off War Games. Michael Hall and Ringwald were cast off of Hughes wanted them.
Vacation, 16 Candles. Judd Nelson, had he been in anything before this? Oh, the Making the Grade, right?
Yeah, like he had some credit. And then Emilio was, he was just kind of among the teens that were out there. I can tell you all, we can go over all the casting choices right now. Hall.
And, well, Emilio, you wouldn't even know was Martin Sheen's son probably at the time because he's got the different last name. You might not even know he's Charlie Sheen's brother.
There's a great story about that I can tell you right now. The janitor character who's played by, what's his name?
John something.
It's
Guy's picture on the wall at the beginning.
John Kapilos. He made a joke to Emilio and the rest of the cast about, hey, you guys, you know, don't work too hard. You might get yourself a heart attack like Martin Sheen in Apocalypse Now. Not knowing that Emilio was his son, and he felt so, Emilio wasn't happy about it. He felt so bad about it for years. And eventually, when Kapilos worked with Sheen on, I think, like a West Wing episode or something, he told him about that and she laughed and said it's okay and like made him feel better because he was holding that for a long time.
Oh geez.
Yeah. Speaking of that janitor, since I'm on him right now, Rick Moranis was originally cast in that part.
Oh, really?
But he tried to do it as an over-the-top Russian character, which didn't fit the vibe. So they recast him, which is funny because the same thing happened with what John Candy in Ghostbusters, where he's like, I want to be like German with dogs or whatever. Like these guys just wanted to like just play big character roles. And everybody was like, no, like just be like a guy. Don't do that. Bill Murray was considered for the janitor, which I wouldn't have been against. I feel like 5 minutes of Murray probably wouldn't have hurt this movie.
And then Caddyshack mode.
Yeah, again, Caddyshack mode. Just as a,
right, that's what I was thinking.
As a space man.
Just be Bill, please.
And then John Candy was considered as well, which makes a lot of sense. This scene right here, there's like, again, I don't want to reflect on the fact that I'm not huge at the movie. I'd rather focus on the things that are, you know, really good about it. This is a great scene, this whole thing between John Nelson and Vernon. Just the kind of back and forth and the, you know, the bullhorns and all that, like, There's clearly iconic stuff going on like throughout this movie that you can like register with as far as it's the way it's come into the culture or just the way it registers just watching the movie.
When the Judd Nelson character is really fuming, the movie gets pretty riveting. I think his performance in this movie is pretty special. I would have expected more from his career than we sort of got, because he's pretty compelling in this movie. I think he's the heart of the movie, Judd Nelson.
I would agree.
Despite being such an off-putting sort of jerk for so much of it.
Well, it's the kind of thing where you can, not in a bad way, but you can see that that's like an image he's certainly creating on top of whatever's going on with him, right? Like he's amping up this vibe of being this tough, this hard guy. But he's also, you know, he's the one that'll ultimately he stands up to the principal. He sticks up for others. He takes the blame for a lot of things. Like there's a lot.
Yeah. It seems like bluster, which is to his credit.
So let's see. Yeah. Hall is Hall. Like Hall was like he was the first one cast in the movie. He accepted right away. Ringwald, she wanted to play Ali Sheedy's character originally. Hughes wanted her for Ali Sheedy's character. She insisted on playing Claire. That said, others considered Robin Wright, Jodie Foster, Diane Lane, and Laura Dern. For Ali Sheedy, Joan Cusack was considered. That said, Brooke Shields was also in the conversation.
Joan Cusack, I see that.
And Laura Dern, once again, was also up for Allison not getting that led her to say this is just teen movie junk, and she moved on to other things. And of course, in that period, it's Blue Velvet and what's the one with Treat Williams?
Smooth Talk.
Smooth Talk. Yeah. And obviously, Laura Dern's had a terrible career since then.
Whereas you can argue none of these five really went on to much, and I don't mean to be cruel, but Emilio Estevez stuck around. But
Emilio's the one that's had. Yeah. I mean, Hall to a point is where Hall's constantly working.
Hall was a dead zone for many years.
Yeah, and he also tried to end Evil that one time. So you know.
He morphed into another person, sort of.
He does, because he shaves off the hair, becomes like, you know, gets a little more muscly.
Who are you calling dork?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he becomes his Edward Scissorhands Billy character.
Right, right. Like, that was a real change.
Yeah.
Ali Sheedy became better born in the 90s.
He becomes Biff Tannen.
Sheedy just got that poor thing of, oh, you're too old now, sorry.
She had High Art in the late 90s. She almost got nominated or was going to get nominated.
Yeah, High Art's a good performer, yeah. But that's pretty much it. Or, I mean, she works, but not, well, you know.
Works, yeah, but.
Emilio was originally Bender, but because Hughes couldn't find anyone to play Andrew, Hughes had him there. He recast him. If he couldn't do that, he considered, none of these actually auditioned, but Hughes considered Michael J. Fox, Jim Carrey, Tom Cruise, Matthew Broderick, and Rob Lowe.
He wasn't getting Michael J. Fox.
For Sorry. Bender or for
Andrew.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not getting. It's just more, these are people I could see doing this role from Hughes' perspective. That's what it is. Tom Cruise in this role. Tom Cruise is already great. He's already huge at this. He's got Risky Business. He's already out the door from being in a Brat Pack. He's moved on. But you can easily see
Tom Cruise role.
You can easily see him being great as like the jock guy. that's right away. There is a story involving Todd Bridges from Different Strokes. He was asked by John Hughes to audition for the role of Andrew. During his audition, one of the producers told him, "We don't know how to write for black people." Bridges replied, "The same way you write for white people," and stormed out. To which they replied, "What are you talking about, Willis?" They didn't say it. But that's a Todd Bridges story in regards to his audition for Breakfast Club. Judd Nelson, this will not surprise you at all. Nick Cage, considered. John Cusack, of the course. Other choice. It was toe-to-toe between John Cusack and Judd Nelson. John Cusack was also quite bitter when he did not get the role and went on to star in any other teen movie he could find and found a little bit of success. So he and Laura Dern got out of the terror hole that was The Breakfast Club, apparently, by having massive careers afterwards.
The curse of The Breakfast Club.
Jim Carrey auditioned. Sean Penn was deemed too nice for the role, which is hilarious to think about.
He has Bender. Now I'm thinking Sean Penn as Bender, Tom Cruise as that's a better it's movie.
Alternate reality version. Brooke Shields is Allison.
Laura Dern. You mentioned Diane Lane, right?
Diane Lane. Yeah,
she would have been great in Molly Ringwald.
Could have had Joan and John Cusack.
Joan and John Cusack. Yeah, the same.
Not playing siblings.
Rob Lowe was also considered for Judd Nelson. Rob Lowe, like, he can play tough. He's just like a scrawny guy in the 80s. So he's like, it wouldn't look tough. He'd just be like, you're just Rob Lowe.
He's like tough, but like too pretty.
He's preppy bully. He's not like beat 'em up bully. What's that movie? Class with him and Cusack and who's the
Andrew McCarthy?
Andrew McCarthy, yeah. McCarthy.
And, but like he's the not whole up class. For this movie, apparently.
But the whole
is the one Andrew McCarthy wasn't up for.
Yeah. Well, he was busy. He was playing. He was in Class. He was the star of that movie. He was busy. I mean, fucking Rob Lowe's mom in that movie.
The only thing that suits Andrew McCarthy is the Anthony Michael Hall role. That's pretty much.
Yeah.
Or a sixth role of like the sort of.
Well, but Andrew McCarthy, like
the really smart, annoying guy.
But Andrew McCarthy's like leaning into the fact that he's like, how was the jock in the other one? Like, why can't I? Alan Ruck auditioned for Bender, which is also interesting to think about. John Hughes was like, I have another role for you. And he puts him in Ferris Bueller. That's the casting. Nick Cage is Bender. It'd be an intense performance. I can see that.
That'd have been.
What's 85? What's Birdie? Is Birdie around the same time?
84, 85, yeah.
Yeah.
That's right before Peggy Sue got married.
Yeah, so he's still like he's in like similar to like Rob Lowe as far as like he could play like preppy tough, but I don't know about like beat 'em up tough.
Raising Arizona, what year is that?
That's 87.
That's like
seven, yeah.
See, like, he'd have like the yin and he'd be like Valley Girl, and then
yeah.
Wow. No, I could totally see Tom Cruise though, but like that's the most like oh yeah, instant. Like probably a similar but elevated Emilio.
Especially the monologue where he breaks down and admits yep. what he did. That Cruise could have nailed that. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So we got the all the casting out of the what else? This movie was very
interesting. Cool. I must say, would you guys agree? Maybe we're getting ahead of the game here, but one thing that certainly dates the heck out of this movie is not only are there no black characters or Hispanic characters, there's not a gay character, there's not
there's the early appearance on the locker of the three-letter F word.
Yes, that's true. I mean, that's like, but if they made this today, almost certainly it would be not just five straight white kids.
Yeah, obviously.
Yeah, Al Pacino is weird, I guess, but it doesn't really.
Yeah, it's the kind of thing where I'm not necessarily excusing it, but like a Midwest 80s town in the 80s like this that's full of basically a lot of conservative families. I don't begrudge this movie for not having a high level of diversity. It kind
diversity
of,
diversity right. then was going, well, one of them's Jewish.
Yeah, it would have yeah.
But which one? We won't tell. but I hear you. Obviously, like cast this movie 5 years later, you would do something differently, probably.
Well, they resisted remaking it, or maybe there's a clause where they can't. You think they would have remade it by now?
Well, yeah, various high school TV shows have remade it multiple times. Like, there's an episode of Dawson's Creek that does this.
Right.
There's, I believe, that Nickelodeon show Victorious does that. Like, there's a lot of shows that I. Have certainly
it's a,
incorporated.
It's a bottle idea. Episode for television.
Exactly.
Shows.
It's easy fodder as far as how to like get people in a room. Yeah, people in a room. They all reveal something about themselves. The end. Like
But don't forget the best one.
Which one?
The theatrical poster for the Texas Chainsaw Massacre Part 2.
Nice. That poster originally, by the way, with the actual cast, that's an Annie Leibovitz photo.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, she took that. Okay. That's part of the photo shoot, and that's what they use for the poster. Or what is we call it? A Peter Paris nightmare.
Yes.
I just, obviously, like that moment where Estevez shows that he could kick his ass if he needed to. This guy's, a punk.
So, if we think Judd Nelson is like, are we saying Judd Nelson is the best performance in this movie? Is that what we're going with? I
think so. I would have expected him to go on to, Al Pacino stuff.
He's definitely the attention getter.
He stayed method for the role, which included basically tormenting Molly Ringwald off camera, which John Hughes almost fired him for. It was actually Paul Gleason who was the one that convinced him to keep him on the movie, saying he's trying to find the character. He's just trying to act.
Paul Gleason, also known for being a guy in 80s movies, when you see him show up, go, oh no, this guy.
He's great, Training Places and Die Hard.
Well, that's what I mean, but he's always going to be the opposition. That's what he shows up to be that.
Yeah.
But in this case, he came to Bender's rescue, came to keep him on the movie. He passed away, right? Yeah, early 2006. Oh, 67. What happened to him? Poor old mesothelioma. Ooh, cancer in the lung. See, you can look at Bill. You can see Bill Murray popping in here. It'd be a huge distraction. Carl. Yeah, definitely as Carl. Yeah.
Yeah, if you want your movie to have like this, I take this one. I know while people fondly look on it as like a teen comedy, this is very much rooted in more dramatics than anything. And I think Moranis, even if he was being normal, Moranis would throw it off.
Yeah, I would agree. Like the movie's obviously tilting more. It's a darker film than the other Hughes movies.
I mean, it's funny because the kids are being funny, not because the situations are funny. The kids are just sort of funny kids.
Yeah, it's not about the antics. It's about just like the natural humor that extends from the script and their performances. By the way, in prep for this, I watched all the Hughes movies I hadn't seen, which was the last three. She's Having a Baby, Buck. Uncle Buck, and Curly Sue. Uncle Buck I enjoyed, because that's the magic of John Candy.
But did you watch the short-lived television series Uncle Buck?
Which one? Because there were two.
Kevin Meaney?
Series. One with Kevin Meaney, the other with Mike Epps, who I like.
I'm talking the original.
I did not watch either, no. She's Having a Baby really tested me as far as
he starts to feel he's trying to be an auteur a bit in that one too.
He does, and I know Kevin Smith's Jersey Girl's heavily inspired by it. I'm like, yeah, I can see that. I get that. And then Curly Sue, I was like, oh boy, okay, so we're done now, right?
I've never seen a frame of that one.
It's
you forgot Reach the Rock. What about Reach the Rock? Or did he not direct that?
He did not direct Reach the Rock. No. I'm now a Hughes completist, and my opinion kind of stayed the same. I'm just not a big Hughes guy.
Planes, Trains, and Automobiles is as good as an 80s comedy gets.
No, and that's by far my favorite of his films.
Yeah.
I do like Ferris Bueller quite a bit with some three major reservations about it. But otherwise, I think it's like, oh, it's
right.
Fun.
I never liked Ferris Bueller. He's too much of an asshole, the lead character.
If anything, it's only because Matthew Broderick's never been cool again. That's why
I love Matthew Broderick. It makes it bearable that if Ferris Bueller was like young Jim Carrey or something, that would be a toxic movie for me to watch.
I do like that Alan Ruck performance quite a bit. I think he's
sweet.
Good.
Yeah,
But I think between that and Planes, Trains, the direction Hughes is bringing to that feels the most complete.
He has some style.
He's definitely going for things in all of these movies. And She's Having a Baby is like the nadir, because it's like, oh boy, he has like a, you mentioned yesterday, there's a lower musical sequence in that film. There's like,
I feel like that movie's more interested in like being different music videos than it is a movie.
Yeah.
And I mentioned not in a Rocky IV montage way. Set pieces are
correct way like Rocky IV.
And it shows because I don't care about Kevin Bacon and Elizabeth McGovern as a couple. If anything, I'm like, these guys should get divorced. Just have the baby and do something else.
Kate Bush song in that movie, though.
It does. And now I know the origins of that song's popularity. Yeah. And I'm like, this is like a standout sequence in this film. But otherwise,
it is.
That was the sequence everybody talked about when it came out.
That's not surprising to me whatsoever. Yeah.
That's why people would leave that movie being like, that was good. It's like,
And I don't know if it's like, because I'm not like, you know me, I'm not like nostalgia guy when it comes to why I like certain movies. But like Weird Science has always like worked for me for some reason. Not because it like makes any fucking sense. It's nonsense. It's a nonsense film. But I think it's just because it's so like broad and out there. It just like, I'm like less about, I hope the teens figure out how to be better at being teenagers or whatever bullshit. Like, I'm just like, no, I enjoy the antics of it. I enjoy Bill Paxton being like ridiculous and being turned into like a shit monster. I like the random scenes where just like she uses magic, even though she's a computer program, to like do things. Just like, it's like so far overboard of the nonsense. It's like almost like Beetlejuice as far as like, not nearly as good, but like as far as the kind of as far as like, we just have a lot of like random shit we're throwing at you, and because the style's there's something about this that connects with me more than like what the plot actually is.
You know, it's funny is I probably recognize more about Weird Science the television series than the movie for me, because I grew up there. Huh?
It was on that show.
It was Vanessa Angel. Vanessa was Angel the woman. Was
Lisa.
Kingpin?
Yeah. Yeah. Yes,
Kingpin's. But that's the only other thing I know her from.
And Jenny McCarthy's first husband was one of the guys, and I think the guy who played the brother was quite recognizable. But that used to be on before USA Up All Night.
Lee,
so
Ferguson,
I'd watch Weird Science leading into Up All Night, or Duckman. That was another show USA. But yeah, so I've watched a lot of Weird Science, the TV show.
Did you ever see the Ferris Bueller show with Charlie Schlatter?
No.
Jennifer Aniston is in that, right? She's Sloane.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
The kid from 18 again with George Burns.
I've just seen clips, but yeah.
Yeah. The teaser for it was him chainsawing a standee of Matthew Broderick as if he's really the real Ferris Bueller.
They say yeah. Ferris.
There was no 16 Candles series, was there?
It wouldn't make no. any sense.
Yeah, be like, is it always? It's just her birthday all the time. That's it. No, there was apparently they're trying to develop a sequel, but everyone said bad idea. Much like all these films, they proposed one for this movie, and Hughes was like, eh, never mind.
And I'm not gonna say like no. People rightfully and truthfully love this movie and these movies and stuff. While we may not be as fond or hire them, but I think there's also a big nostalgia for the 80s when like teenagers ruled the movies. Cause I don't think they had a decade before where they were constantly being fed to, like there's all these comedies, there's the slasher movie, horror spun more towards teens. Like they were constantly able to go to the theater and have movies that were crafted for teenagers in a way that hadn't been done before. The 80s really separated out like, okay, we have different demographics going to movies, folks. We need to start, feeding
the MTV generation got a heavy supply of things. And I mean, you know, youth has always gone to the movies, but yeah, studios finally decided, you know, it'd be good to make movies for youth.
Yeah. Well, and then it starts, I mean, somewhere in the 2000s, like we've watched, you know, through the Summer Of series, we've saw the evolution of just like homogenizing to, you know, nothing. Like we were amazed that like, 2000 when we did 2004, it's like, oh man, they make movies for girls. Mm-hmm. Look at this all the time. And then you get to 2015, it's like, no. Maybe a movie in the summer.
I like this gag of Emilio's lunch being like a fucking magician's handbag. It's like all this stuff comes out of it.
Right.
I suspected that was a reverse shot.
Yeah. That seems too perfect. I don't know what Ally Sheedy's doing.
I knew kids who thought this would be cool to make this sandwich with the was it Lucky-ish? No, it's Captain Crunch and Captain Crunch
eventually.
Pixie Sticks.
But it's like, is this just performative? Like, does she believe in this sandwich, or is she just trying to like do something to weird everybody else out?
She's certainly the character that comes across the least of the five, I think.
Well, because you have to you have to slowly reveal her. You know, she becomes she's the ugly duckling, right, or whatever. She's got a.
Well, they give her the pretty makeover at the end, and Emilio Estevez starts to do it, right?
They mildly straighten her hair.
Mm-hmm.
She takes off her paint-covered overalls.
She looks better like this.
Yeah, she looks better like this. Some guys like girls like that. She's pretty. This got so many people wore this outfit. This with the white, you know, the long underwear under a button shirt.
Trench coats. But trench coats were kind of a thing. I would say because Cusack wore trench coats in a couple of his movies a bit.
I had this kind of thing done to me. I guarantee it. I was thinking, yeah, I know you think you're the Breakfast Club, dude. but someone actually doing this like routine, you know, I'm like, get the fuck out of here. I saw that movie.
Movie did cost $1 million. It was very cheap.
Made about 50 million, right?
It made 50. It's a huge hit. Mm-hmm. The return on interest is fantastic.
Was this a summer or was this a
February? This is a winter February. Release. Yeah, mm-hmm. Which is why I think they probably helped. Yeah, 50 million. Yeah, he earns that way. It's why I think Weird Science. They probably made that first, but held it because they knew that could be like a big summer comedy by comparison.
And then you could, Anthony Michael Hall from Breakfast Club.
Hey, they didn't know at the time. They're just like, but yeah.
Oh, I know when you later, yeah.
Yeah, by the time they got there, they could certainly sell it that way for sure. Also, I do quite like Anthony Michael Hall in Weird Science specifically. I think he is quite funny in that movie.
He's very good. He's, probably not looked upon as and maybe overlooked as one of the best actors with comedic timing in the 80s. Because he's got, even from Vacation, he's got something special. Like you can see why they're putting him in these roles.
He does well with Chevy in Vacation. Like there's a lot of scenes of him having to like go along
sitting together and drinking the beer or whatever.
Go along with the bits and like you can tell because what's his name in Vacation?
Randy Quaid.
No, his son. What's Michael Holt? What's his son's name?
Rusty.
Rusty. I know it's like an R. I'm like, what's the name?
Yeah.
Rusty sucks in European Vacation, and Johnny Galecki didn't bring anything to Christmas Vacation. Yeah, so it's like, it's clearly Anthony Michael Hall is the one that stands out. Ethan Embry.
But in the fourth
Ethan
one,
Embry, yeah, Vegas, Ethan Embry.
Vegas,
though.
Vegas does work, but yeah, Ethan Embry brings up, what, John Papadakis or whatever they fucking call him in that movie. It's like, but that's like a whole its own plot, which is like, whatever. You know who really likes Anthony Michael Hall? Stanley Kubrick. Kubrick watched this movie four times. He watched this movie four times. He saw him as a young Spencer Tracy. He offered
saw this own, four times?
Saw this four times.
Oh, good for Kubrick.
Because he really liked the Anthony Michael Hall performance, and he was casting Full Metal Jacket, and he's like, I want this guy to be my Joker. And Anthony Michael Hall was like, fuck Thanks. You, Stanley Kubrick. I'm saying no to this. I don't know why. He turned it, but he turned it down.
I thought he went. No, I think he went, and they started shooting, and he got fired.
I heard he turned it down. That's what it
was. The story is always that he was giving Kubrick notes.
I could buy that, I suppose.
That's what he was just not. I could see him in that role, though. I mean, Modine does a certainly good job, but I could see Anthony Michael Hall in that part. Mm-hmm.
Well,
I don't see young Spencer Tracy, but well.
That's a funny thing for him to say. So.
I love the weirdness of Kubrick's, like what he watches a lot, what he gets into. Like, it's so fascinating. I wonder if he called Anthony Michael Hall in the middle of the night like he would do to people.
Okay, yeah, so right. Like I'm saying the misconception is that he was fired for complaining about Kubrick's directing style. There were negotiations going on for months, for 8 to 10 months, preparation, and it was because there was a failure to reach a financial agreement. That's what it says is the ultimate reason why this happened.
I see. Yeah. Sounds like faces were saved.
Perhaps. But he was the first choice for Private Joker. And you can see that transition because obviously he becomes like, you know, swole after the 80s. So.
Yeah.
Was Paul Gleason in movies in the 70s? He must
Dick
be.
Vernon. Oh, yeah.
Yes. Obviously he rose to prominence more by playing, you know, this kind of character as well as play, you know, the antithetical to our protagonist, basically. But
it's kind of the 80s Ben Mendelsohn.
Very much. Good point.
A little That's less good. Greasy, but yes. Yeah, I just saw, I watched him yesterday, The Great Santini. He's in there.
I wasn't looking.
Small role. A lot of TV. Yeah, it looks like, a lot of TV. Mission Impossible, Adam 12, FBI. Yeah, he's been
made the rounds.
He was acting since the 60s. Let's see, what's his first, like he's in some movies in small roles, but it looks like, Great Santini, and then, into the 80s you have, He Knows You're Alone. That's the Tom Hanks one, right?
Oh, yeah, yep.
He's in there as a detective. He's in Fort Apache in the Bronx, which is a Paul Newman movie.
You know what helps this,
Arthur,
too?
Pursuit of D.B. Cooper. Trading.
Arthur,
It looks like between Tender Mercies and Trading Places, those seem like the bigger like roles that he starts to get to be in movies. Brandon?
One thing I think could help connect to it, and having been a person who went to school in the Midwest, this looks like a legit school. I mean, I know they're shooting in a school, but it looks like a legit school.
They treat it like a school,
yeah, and they're not overdoing it with banners on the walls and you know.
Oh, the Under the Sea dance isn't coming up anytime soon.
Yeah. Yeah, Back to the Future, another teen movie, and they're just loaded.
Considered that for this. But I feel like we should do Back to the Future. Like, we should do, like, just the three of them at some point.
Yeah.
It's like, we don't talk about Back to the Future very much on this podcast for some reason. But
I love Back to the Future. Up and down.
Who doesn't?
It'd be fun to talk about all three of them.
Yeah.
It's certainly less depressing than talking about all five Pirates movies back to the Future.
And tell people they should appreciate three. It's good.
It's the only good one. Scott Mendelsohn.
Wait, Back to the Future, he says?
Not, I'm kidding. He likes the third one the most because he's a crazy person.
The third has grown on me for sure. Over the
years. Yeah,
it's grown
on me. But the third used to be the like soft ending, but now I enjoy watching that one a lot. Like, I'm not saying it's like the best or anything, but I get a lot more out of it in my older age than I, because two is the fun, wacky, and big time travel odyssey adventure. And then three was like, the Old West. But now I'm like, the Old West. Yeah.
I, I love to, we'll talk about this more in our eventual commentaries. I love two, but I'd seen one so much where I'm like, is two better? Just because I was worn out on watching the first one so many times. Yeah. I've since been like, no, one is like a perfect movie.
But it
like,
is awesome. So, yeah.
Two was very exciting to finally see after seeing 100 times. You're
yeah,
right.
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah. Wow, yeah.
New one. It was only 4 years later.
Everybody?
It came out 4 years later.
And it's a like, real, like, the. We'll talk about this. They're magic trick movies as far as what Zemeckis is able to do. And it makes me sad that Zemeckis can't like find that magic anymore when it comes to his newer movies. But, you know, whatever.
Well, you got it once. Maybe that was Gale.
Yeah, it's Bob Gale the whole time. There goes Bender trying to make things better for everybody.
You guys do detention?
Yes. I've done Saturday school. Like these.
I never did Saturday. I had after school detention.
Right, after school detention. Yeah.
Yeah, they have detention, but yeah, I never had like that detention.
I wasn't a bad kid, guys.
Well, I got Saturday school once. I did something naughty. Not really. It was weird circumstances.
Took my SAT on a Saturday, but
yeah. Look at all the thing. I don't know, Brandon. There's a lot of banners in that room.
Yeah. I wonder if this is the same gym they built the library in.
That's what I'm wondering now. They're only shooting in part of it just to it kind of doesn't look like a gym. Like it's just like the wall.
It's like an elementary school gym. If you look at the floor, that's like the, because they schools didn't have the wooden basketball floor.
And the basketball rim's like, that's the wall. Like, there's nothing after it, which is weird.
Yeah.
That's like where it stops.
It's not much between out of bounds and the, yeah.
Yeah. What do we think of who is he? By, is he the vice principal? Is that the idea?
Yeah.
He must be the vice principal, right? Like, he's not, the principal's not hanging out at Saturday school.
Right.
He's dressed too cool to be a teacher, so he's got to be a vice principal.
They only shot in that small corner, so that's probably outside where they enter the set.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting.
But what do we make of his, like, because he's so against them from the get-go, all of them.
He said someone that they absolutely don't respect at all. They know he's just he's not like a caring educator. He dresses like, you know.
And he doesn't have much power because he's the vice principal.
Right. He has to work Saturday. He's in detention with them, you know.
Because there's no redemption either. Like, he is just the villain. Like, that's it. Like, he's the authority. And I guess, you know, thematically.
It wouldn't be redemption. Those guys in high school who were just like mean old dudes. I don't know they ever got redeemed.
Nor do I necessarily need anything. It's just like, there's nothing else. It is, but he's not like, I wouldn't even call him one dimensional. Because there are like a few scenes where like the scene where he's going back and forth about all the detention he's going to get, and he's walking out of the room, and Judd Nelson yells "fuck you" at him, and you can see in his eyes he doesn't want this. Like, there's something that there's just enough there where you can tell, like, I don't want this guy to be an asshole. Like, I don't want to be the asshole.
Aaron,
it really hardens you. People I know, you know, getting exposed to teenagers every day, for year in, year out, you just get really sick of them.
But Paul Gleason knows when they fight authority, authority always wins.
Thank you.
I don't think anybody could have done this part better than Paul Gleason. He's just perfect in this movie.
That's
just a dick.
That's why what, Not Another Teen Movie just uses Paul Gleason again. Like, there's it does, which is, it's fine. Like, that movie has highlights. I don't dislike it, but you can't like recast that role in something that like makes as much sense, right? Like, it just, he's really good at this.
Because he seems like a cheap soul. It's the performance, but he just seems like there's nothing good about this guy. He's completely selfish.
Is there a nice Paul Gleason role? Is there some?
Well, I'm sure who is he in The Great Santini?
He's just like a lieutenant. He's like, he's nothing of like importance. He's just like one of the guys that flies with Duvall, or like is just in the area of Duvall. Let's see. Look at the his filmography. Let's see.
I mean, Clarence Beeks in Trading Places. He's just a complete crude.
He's like the villain.
Evil guy. Die Hard, he's this guy again, basically a stuffed shirt, you know?
He's a bad guy, money talks, of course.
Is he?
He's a corrupt police officer, yes. He has a bit where he shoots his partner, and he looks at Chris Tucker, he's like, you asshole, you just killed my partner. And Chris Tucker goes, you just killed your partner! It's fun. That movie... as much as only Brandon respects Brett Ratner and the rest of us don't, I do like Money Talks.
I like shrimp.
Yeah, I can't see anything on here that would suggest that he ever played like a character you like want to get behind.
Beloved grandpa down on the bayou or something.
Nothing. Yeah, there's none of those like, yeah, that's the thing. He died too early, so he doesn't have like those nice roles at the end.
No secondhand lions or anything.
Yeah, right. Yeah, he didn't have his secondhand lions.
Wrestling or right. No, I guess
he didn't get to play a lovable old coot.
Lovable old coot.
Who is he in? In Miami Blues. Who's he in that? He's a
I don't remember.
Sergeant Franklin. Yeah, he's a cop somewhere. Who's he in Johnny Be Good? I haven't seen Johnny Be Good.
That's another one with Anthony Michael Hall, right?
I know, yeah, it is.
He's the Anthony Michael
him,
Hall.
Him and Downey.
And Uma Thurman, right?
Yeah. Is it Uma? Yeah, it's Uma's like first movie. Is it one of her first movies?
You know what? Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah.
Would have been great for the Ali Sheedy role in this.
Yep. You're right.
I'm dead serious.
Yeah, you would have.
He could play Anthony Michael Hall.
Yeah, he could. Isn't he in 16 Candles with Anthony Michael Hall? Or am I thinking of Cusack?
Well, he's in Weird Science.
Weird Science.
In Weird Science.
That's him and Robert Russell.
Yeah.
And when they were filming Weird Science, Robert Downey Jr. Took Robert Russell to his Nightmare on Elm Street 2 audition.
Oh, really?
So Downey Jr. was there at the Nightmare on Elm Street 2 auditions. And I always think, and I always like to, it's funny, like, we always talk about them, but I am always fascinated about, like, who went out for these roles. And I always like to, whenever I talk to, like, actors, celebrities, people, I always like to, like, know the what ifs. Like, what did you read for? You know, I know it sucks you didn't get parts and stuff, but like, what did you read? Where's this universe where you get this other part and something's like completely different? And like, a lot of them don't. I don't know. Like, no, you read for shit. You read for, like, if you were a teen in the 80s, you read for probably a lot of different things. But, just, yeah, it's like, one of my favorite stories is I interviewed Linnea Quigley many years ago. I talked to her about how she was for a long time attached to and in Reservoir Dogs, or was supposed to be in it, but they her part kept in rewrites kept dwindling down, and it was like a one-line woman on the street. There was a female detective that was in the original script looking for the cop that gets his ear cut off, and there was a side story with her, and that was supposed to be her, and Tarantino and her had the same manager, and that he was writing that role with her, you know, having her mind stuff and da da da, and it kept dwindling down till it was like woman who gets shot on the street, and it was like, nah, I'm not doing that. So, but you know, there's all these like stories, like who could have been this, who could have been that, you read for this, like I'm sure, like someone who's underutilized in this decade, like Amanda Wiss probably went to, I mean, she was probably reading for tons of shit.
Yeah. I mean, you know, when I go through these lists of like who's auditioning for what, these are like obviously notable names and whatnot, but I guarantee like every member of the Outsiders auditioned for some role in this movie. Like, right. There's no doubt.
What's
her name?
What's the blonde from Night of the Comet? She's good. What is her name?
She's in Fast Times too.
Yeah. I met her. I met both.
Maroney.
Kelly. Kelly Maroney.
Kelly Maroney. Yeah, she's really nice. I've met her before too. Yeah.
Yeah.
She's great in that movie.
When I reviewed Night of the Comet, she DM'd me and was like, can I share that? I'm like, yeah, go for it.
Well, Jimmy O, friend of the show, hosted a whole screening series of it was three back-to-back movies involving like badass women, and one was Night of the Comet, and they were there to talk.
Both of them are very nice.
They are very nice, yeah. It was a very cool evening.
Catherine Mary Stewart should have been a huge megastar, but...
She got her share of things. But
She had her 80s, but... Yeah. She did the apple.
She did the apple.
Credit for life. You have to see the apple.
One of these days I will see the apple. For sure.
Seems like a commentary for a different project.
Do what they're doing right now on screen and watch the Apple. That's all. Yeah, right. Say. The Apple.
Yeah. I always forget that there's like a drug scene in this movie. Maybe the TV version doesn't have or like edits it down or something. Because I'm like, I always forget that there's like, oh yeah, there's a scene where they just like,
can you pass me that cigarette?
This is another scene that proves that marijuana is the only drug you can do in movies, and it means something positive. You're loosening up, you're chilling out, you're cool. Any other drug, even coffee, tends to apply something about the character that's kind of needs to be fixed and negative. When characters in the third act all get high together, it's always a sign that they're all unwound a little
bit. Only in commercials that marijuana is bad.
Yeah,
it sure as hell wasn't less than zero that was telling you drugs are good. That's for sure. Yeah. Speaking of Downey. How far do you think James Spader got in the auditions for this movie? Or you think he was about this?
Which part?
It's got to be Nelson, right?
Yes, yeah. By far.
He would have been way. Yeah, he would have been too
intense.
Too intellectually superior to the rest of them. It would have been.
Yeah, there would have been no intensity. It would have been suave assholeness.
No, because
go to this school. How old are you, man?
Yeah, he does. He has because he's such a dick in all these movies. But he has an intensity when he like just the way he like. His posture, and he's a tall guy. Like he has that going for him. Like it'd be less about like obviously the muscle. What is Emilio doing? This glass stuff is so ridiculous.
He wouldn't have been wearing what Judd Nelson's wearing.
Oh no, yeah, he'd have like a beret or a scarf.
Would have been a nice black suit
or like a cravat. He'd be dressed like a 50-year-old man from the '40s. Apparently,
he's the king of like the sweater around the shoulders. Like that's.
But compared to like we were saying with Rob Lowe, I would buy that he also has like enough muscle to like to lay into you if he wanted to. He has that kind of thing going for him. He would just be really nice. He'd be really suave about it.
What was the Spader at this point was what? The New Kids, which was is terrific. The Tough Turf. Where is Spader in 85?
Where is Spader? Like because he has Pretty in Pink's 86.
Pretty in Pink's the next year.
Pink, yeah, Pretty in Pink. Which is a good movie, Pretty in Pink. It's not directed by Hughes, so it's got a little bit of nice grit to it.
Ducky sucks.
I can't stand Ducky.
I don't like Ducky. I don't like John Cryer or Ducky.
I don't like any of that at all. I like Annie Potts quite a bit.
It really feels like the 80s I grew up in, that Pretty in Pink, the record store and that sort of style. That really palpably reminds me of when I was a kid.
I hadn't seen 16 Candles. I also hadn't seen Pretty in Pink until last year. So I watched both of them back to back, and I'm like, God, Ducky is fucking destroying me right now. I cannot.
But if that was Matthew Broderick, you wouldn't hate it.
No, probably not.
That's what I'm saying.
It's specifically that character, but also it's the way he's written. We don't even talk about Pretty in Pink right now. We're gonna piss more people off.
Pretty in Pink is a divisive one, though. So.
I just assume they're all like, because they're all Hughes, there's just like a segment of people that just like think these are all like the most beloved films.
Then there's the opposite Pretty in Pink, which is some kind of wonderful. Yeah. Have you seen that one?
No, that's next. That was next to my list. I didn't get to.
Oh. Yeah, Thompson.
Even down that's to fun. A redhead lead. It's amazing. It's like some kind of wonderful.
Is that not Hughes or is that Hughes still?
It's Hughes again,
it's
right?
Hughes.
He's just it's Howard Deutsch. It's like a follow-up to the
It's the reaction to Pretty in Pink movie, and it's where Howard Deutsch met
Leah Thompson, and then they made a Zoe.
But in Some Kind of Wonderful, he goes with the ducky, right? Instead of he goes. It's what's her name?
Then there's no wigs.
Stuart Masterson.
There's no wigs.
Leah Thompson. That's a tough choice for a young man.
Well, one didn't fuck a duck.
So. Right. Right.
No, James Spader, he's all over here. Like, yeah, tough, New Kids, 85, Pretty in Pink's Neck the year after. Then 87, he's in Mannequin, Baby Boone, he's in Less Than Zero. It's like
Wall Street, he's in
Wall Street. Yeah.
Yeah.
So he's in
ranks pretty
he's
soon.
In like greasy mode at this point. It's all like, he's a dick all the time. I mean, building up to like, Sex Lies and Videotape where it's a superpower to be a dick, but like a sexual dick.
Is D.B. Sweeney auditioning for any of these?
Probably, but he's like a smidge older, right? Because he's like Joe. Joe, right? And Eight Men Out, but that's 88. But
he would have been up for Anthony Michael Hall if there was anyone.
I could see him being considered. It just seems like he. I think he reads a bit older.
Yeah,
Gotcha. At that point in time. I don't
know.
He's in that Coppola movie that we both watch, isn't he? Gardens of Stone.
He's in Gardens of Stone. Yeah. But then you have like your C. Thomas Howell.
C. Thomas Howell, who is around but gets nothing.
Not in the Hughes clique. He's doing Secret Admirer and
Grand
Hitcher.
Like I said, all the outsiders. Ralph Macchio's. He's got Karate Kid, so he's like set. He's like, I have a franchise. Thank you very much.
Swayze is already too old. Probably
Swayze's way too old at this point. He's the oldest one of the outsiders. Like he's the one that's like doing a handstand on the fence, be like, let's go rumble.
Because he might have been Bender in some universe. I can see Swayze in that part.
And then the Coreys are on their own planet.
Yeah,
away from this.
Yeah. Well, they're TV magazine, right? They don't need movies. They just need publicity.
Right.
None of them cross over into the Hughesiverse. Nope. That's interesting.
Nope. They got Feldman works with Spielberg a couple times, not directing, but like productions.
Kiefer's like a bit older too, right? At this point, he's like there.
Who is
Kiefer?
Kiefer Sutherland. Yeah.
Kiefer's he films too old.
Yeah, because Stand By Me is 86, and
he's Lost Boys around this time. Yeah,
he has a chubby face still at that point, but yeah, he looks like his dad, I think, too much, and that reads older.
But the Phoenixes are like they're too prestige, right?
Too prestigious.
They're prestige. Leaf is only like 12 at this point, so he's like too young.
Right. But he's got Space Camp the following year.
But River is like he's in his own league at this point. He's
the golden child. Yeah.
He's in Mosquito Coast at this point.
Yeah. Running on empty.
They're all hanging out. They're all hanging out with each other.
And Cruz, who rises above all of them, is also part of the...
Because Cruz had risky business, so he's like, he's off. And he's in Ridley Scotland right now filming Legend, and it's going to bomb.
What about Val Kilmer? Val Kilmer's around, but he's not liked by anybody.
He's got real genius, and he's got real secret, and like he's on his own planet.
Another bender with Val Kilmer.
Well, I think even Val, the doc, talks about it. Like, he had aspirations, much like Cruz. He was trying to work with like big directors, right? He wanted to do like everything else. Because he auditioned for Apocalypse, right? When he was like super young, like isn't that the thing he did?
Did he?
Like he sent in. He attempted to. He was too young, but like.
But I don't know what Emilio, his work ethic and stuff is like. But Charlie was one that like. Martin had to keep his eye on, convince him to stay on sets. Like
Emilio was, if you watch,
it was
that
like,
show,
oh, I'm doing my dad's job. Like when your parent makes you do their work, that's kind of what Charlie kind of felt.
Emilio was the one that everyone thought was going to be a big film director. And if you watch that Charlie Sheen doc from a few months back on Netflix or wherever that was, you see some footage of all of them, Sean Penn, everybody hanging out. And it's clear that Emilio is like the ringleader. And is organizing these big shoots and is very ambitious. And obviously went on to direct some movies.
Yeah, Emilio's responsible. He has that kind of team.
Yeah, he's a good son in that. Yeah.
Well, and even Charlie, in the Andrew McCarthy doc, he's like, I don't know, fine, we'll come talk. But he's like, why are you doing this? Like, we've moved on. Like, what are you? He's
Estevez does?
Yeah. He's like, I'll do the doc, but like, what are you doing?
Because the doc becomes less about, isn't it crazy that we're all part of the Brat Pack and more of Andrew McCarthy has issues he's trying to work out on his fucking
camera. Yeah.
This is the other scene that we get like some humanity out of Gleason with him and the janitor. Charlie, he has Red Dawn the year before this. He's already in like action star mode, but he does Lucas, which I quite like. Lucas is fun. I like Lucas. But also he's in like Platoon.
Ferris Bueller.
And he has that small role in Ferris Bueller, which I think he's quite effective in that one scene. Yep. Like he does the job, but he's clearly doing other stuff. I know I heard this other, the one story where he was going to be Karate Kid. He had the role. He nailed it. Like, they weren't going to go with Macchio, they were going to go with Karate Kid. However, Charlie Sheen signed a contract agreement to do Grizzly 2 Revenge. with like George Clooney and
Laura Dern.
And he went to his dad, and Martin Sheen's like, you made an agreement with these people. That's the deal. You got to turn down the other role. And he did. And obviously Charlie Sheen had an amazing career. We won all those Oscars and never did drugs.
Do you remember when he did The Wraith? Yeah, he does The Wraith the year after this.
It is The Wraith. It's, yeah, the Sandy Sig. Yeah, he has The Wraith. And then The Wraith.
Oh, The Wraith. That thing. Yeah. Yeah.
And like, he basically was like just like passing through to like film some other movie and stopped in, filmed The Wraith, and then like did something else. And I believe, was it Johnny Depp was dating Sherilyn Fenn or somebody at the time? It was like, yeah, afraid she was going to hook up with Charlie Sheen. So he was like, went on set every day that Charlie Sheen was on The Wraith.
Yeah, Johnny Depp has her name written on his helmet in Platoon, Sherilyn.
Okay.
Yeah. That's the other thing we're not even talking about. Like, Brandon, you already talked about right away that you were so much more into the Friday and Jason movies being like your teenage movies. Mm-hmm. Where are those actors? Are they auditioning for these? Probably, right? They got to be auditioning for these movies.
Those use a lot of like television guest star actors.
Perhaps, but
you have Friday the 13th. They use a lot of like local New Jersey talent up until like the fourth one. Well, the third one has Tracy Savage, who is a child star, and that was her like retirement movie was Friday the 13th Part 3. But Part 4 has like Crispin Glover. It's got the guy from Last American Virgin.
Like the Fridays are certainly cheaper, so they have less.
Got the girl in American talent. Ninja. Yeah, they start billing up more. And like the
Nightmare movies though have like talents. They have like
Nightmare movies have some like, yeah, those
bigger,
are people.
That's a bigger studio, or at least the effort they're putting into
it means more to that studio. Yeah. But like. And then,
by the
like,
way, the scene here where they're all sitting talking about how they're Nintendo ad-libbed. There's no script for this sequence. They worked out the stories that they wanted to tell for being in detention. Sorry.
Gotcha. Yeah, but like, and then like Halloween, very more independent movies don't usually. I mean, they found Daniel Harris, but well, I guess Sacha Mitchell's in Halloween 4, and he had a little run. He was in Dazed and Confused and some other things, but
you find people that are, they're all young actors. So like, but like, they're all, they have to, like, if they have good agents, they're at least getting in the room to be like, hey, you want to apply for this John Hughes movie or whatnot. But,
and I'm sure some of them were seen for movies like this for just like, we'll see them, but we're pretty set on who we want. Just
in something like this, we're casting very specific people, very specific parts, but the movies like Pretty in Pink or the ones that involve like ensembles and like the high school itself, I can see them being like, yeah, you want to be like, you know, Marla Ringwald's like second best friend, like that kind of thing. I can see that happening for a lot of those actors.
Yeah. And a lot of them too, like there's, I mean, like I said, like a lot of those people mainly do TV. Like that's pretty much, you know, their big film chance is a Friday the 13th. And then they go back to television stuff.
Sheen's eight. I'm looking at just Charlie Sheen now. His 80s are pretty strong as far like when you look back at like what he had.
Like, he's got a good 90s too.
He's got it's not terrible. And he just pivots to TV eventually, so it's like it just kind of tails. But like if you have Beyond Red Dawn, which is its own thing, you have Platoon, along with like appearances and things like Ferris Bueller and Lucas, then you have Wall Street back, goes back to Oliver Stone, has Wall Street, he has Eight Men Out and Young Guns. He's briefly in Young Guns, but he's in it. Mm-hmm. But then he has Major League, so it gets like a big comedy sports.
Hot Shots and Major League, he's a big comedy star.
He starts to lean into that while still also being action guy, because he's like got Navy SEALs and The Rookie. Like,
Terminal Velocity,
like Terminal Velocity, yeah. So he's, and then like right. Hot Shots.
Chase.
The Chase.
Chase.
Hot Shot with completely normal Christy Swanson. And Hot Shots Part 2, it's like, I'm going to get fucking Rambo body. Like, it's insane. Like, what he's doing with his physique while also, like, leaning into the fact that he's actually pretty funny. He's got a Three Musketeers movie. Like, he's got... And, yeah, then the 90s, he's still around. Like, he's still a draw. Like, he's definitely supporting in Money Talks, but he's on the poster. Second build, like, first name up there on the... You know, he's got all that... The Arrival, which we did the commentary for.
Yep. Big fans.
Yeah. But yeah, then it tails off. Although he, you know what he's great in? Being John Malkovich. And the fact that he's friends with John Malkovich and calls him Malcatraz is always the funniest thing. Malcatraz.
Malkovich. That's good.
What's Emilio's thing for why he's in detention? What did he do?
He taped the guy's butt together and tore
off. Yeah.
Say that again and slower. What?
What he taped another wrestler's buns together, like a guy got a really hairy ass, I think, and then he ripped the tape off and
okay,
something really stupid,
like because he just. Well, he's talking about it right now. Let me read the subtitles to see like how he describes what he did here.
Was he trying to impress his dad or something by being
taping a guy's butt together?
I forget what it is. But his story is that he's too pressured right at home.
Yeah.
Which is the one thing about this movie that you have to either live with or reject. The very idea that there are these distinct types. I mean, that you know, it's very theatrical that you would have one of each of these types, you know, and not two jocks and one nerd. And, you know, it's one of each type, which is a very, you know.
Cinema.
Cinema.
No, yeah, it's very, like, it's very stagey in that way, you know.
It's very stagey, but did you, I totally didn't feel like I was any particular one of these types. I mean, I think everybody had a little bit of all these people in them, which maybe is the point, but.
Yeah, I mean, it's like Brandon said, it's cinema. Like, you have to, like, extrapolate and, like, create characters out of this. It just, and yes, I didn't necessarily relate to any one of these five more than others in the way it's designed or what for a variety of reasons, but.
Yeah, Anthony Michael Hall's the nerd, but, like, and I props to them for making him like this and not look like super stereotypical.
He didn't walk in with suspenders, pulling his pants all the way up, and his glasses falling off his nose.
But I feel like that's kind of nerd, where it's like, that's the nerd. I'm like, I don't feel connected. Okay, he's like I do good in school. Like, that's his nerdiness. And I obey my parents.
Yeah, like, he's like specifically like a mama's boy. Like, that's kind of like where they're leaning at and the way he kind of addresses things. Where Judd Nelson more is. Boys, Judd Nelson boys is like, there's no mom and his dad beats him up.
Broken right? home. Like, yeah, bad home.
I think there are more boys that could relate to Ali Sheedy than
Anthony Michael Hall. I would have been the shy and quiet one in this group.
If someone just straightened her hair a little bit, though, I mean, she'd be fine. So that's all it needs. I need to change. That's the problem. That's what that's what they're telling Ali Sheedy.
And I think with Molly Ringwald, it's not an feeling seen or identifying. It's a I want to be that.
Yeah.
Emilio is definitely and him and Judd Nelson are clearly defined people that you just like know those two.
Yeah.
And you get some variety of the others, but like those two are hard line. Like, yes, John Hughes, we met those people too.
Yeah.
Cause I feel like with Ringwald and Sheedy, there's a hint of male fantasy with those rather than being.
Oh, for sure. I mean, by the end of this movie, Molly Ringwald's like, you know, remember when you like attempted to sexually assault me? I'm into you now. We should hang out next weekend.
Right.
When you're out of Saturday school, which you'll be in for the next 6 weeks. And Ali Sheedy's like, you know what? I've never talked to a boy in my life because I have other things going on. But now that my hair straightened out, and you're looking at me differently. I should change my entire personality for you, the jock.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Ben McCall's like, I'm going to find more bombs. The school is going down next week. I'm going to find my friend Cameron. He's depressed all the time, too.
You know, you guys talk about how all of them looking too old for their parts. When I was younger,
not all of them. Just Nelson and Emilio was a little older.
Okay, they didn't strike me that way because I was younger watching older people, so it just didn't really. They didn't look, you know, super out of place, and I didn't think because they always made fun of what's her name? She played Andrea on 90210 because she was much older than the rest of the cast. Right. Didn't strike me that way because I was younger, so I didn't have an idea, you know.
Right.
I would.
And they dressed like teens, so it, you know.
I would say if I, in a vacuum, if I watched this movie when I was younger, I probably would feel the same way. But I think because I grew up in a culture where it was very fun to make fun of the fact that teenagers were often played by people later on, just based on like the years that I was growing up, that probably helped in assisting me recognize the fact that these people, some of these people do look older than others.
Like Allison Hannigan. Like I know Allison Hannigan was like 40 when she did Buffy, but she still looked.
Yes, Allison Hannigan was older. She'd been around. She was in My Stepbrother Was an Alien, right? So
she was in sitcoms at this time.
Yeah.
Playing teen. And Seth Green, man. Five years ago started looking too old to play teen parts.
Yeah. Well, Seth Green had this. He had a reverse Benjamin Button's disease. That was the problem. Yeah. That lipstick trick that she just did, she couldn't actually do it. They had to find like camera angles to like work around the fact that she couldn't really do that thing.
Hmm.
We all can, though. It's a special skill. Men are very good. Just like how I have naturally curly eyelashes, I can easily do the lipstick trick. It's just a thing we do. What else? Shot in sequence.
Oh. Helps with the actors when they're so young.
I'd imagine, like, for a thing like this, when you're, like, finding the character and revealing more throughout. Thank you, yeah. Brandon. I got the joke. But I mean, it's really helpful for Anthony Michael Hall, because he'd be like, he'd have to put Judd Nelson on a box every time they had scenes at certain points. But I imagine, like, you're finding this character and you're coming up with, like, ways to express who they are and revealing things. It makes sense to, like, shoot this kind of thing in a sequence.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like there's a big set piece where, like, well, we better get this gym scene out of the way or before everybody else.
Yeah, Dogma had some good dialogue regarding this movie.
About Shermer, the Shermer
about Illinois. Shermer, Illinois, and not existing, and then Judd Nelson was bad.
All the women are fine, Nelson, but all the guys
in the next movie.
Jay's line is like, all the women are fine, but the guys are pussies or something like that. Except Judd Nelson, he's harsh.
He's harsh.
So they figure they could go to Sherman, Illinois, and pick up some women because all the guys suck in that town.
Yeah, I think this movie does a good job of giving us five characters who think that they are all from different walks of life and all have different problems, and having them all end up simpatico at the end. I seem to remember having experiences in my younger life where you get thrown together with a bunch of people that you don't know, and if you spend a long time with them, eventually you do sort of form this little happy band. It reminds me of that kind of discovering yourself you would make when you were around people you didn't know and so had some kind of strange adventure like this. I think there's a reason that this one stands out and is in the Criterion Collection, no less.
Yeah, I just got a 4K upgrade back in November. I still have just the regular blue, which looks fantastic. So
I have that too.
Same transfer, just, well, one's projected on 1080p and the other's 2160, but
I reviewed the Blu-ray for Weiss of Blue, and I'm so indifferent to this movie that I gave it away because I'm like, I don't need it.
Oh, good lord!
Like, and I have thousands of Criterion Blu-rays at this point, and I'm like, I can get rid of one.
Feels like you're aggressively indifferent to it.
Yeah, I guess you didn't even want to sell it. You were like, I'm going to give it to somebody. Like, I don't want someone to have to pay for this.
It has hours of extra stuff and deleted scenes and everything. Like, it has everything on it.
It's got a commentary from 2008 with Anthony Michael Hall and Judd Nelson.
Like, if I feel like it, maybe in a sale, I'll pick up the 4K.
I'm betting that there are criterions you have in that collection that are movies you actually feel less about than you this one.
There's like a good Citizen chance. Kane.
There's a good chance. I'm not watching DePon all the time, that's for sure.
Heavy metal vomit parties.
Is that what she says?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I heard the second one was going to take place at a heavy metal vomit party. All five of them bump into each other again.
Heavy metal vomit party is one of my favorite industrial bands of the 90s.
Heavy metal
vomit. Or as we call them, HMVP. So much hate going on here. They're going to fall in love. What else? We're in this, like, this sad part of the movie, right? That's where I'm watching it, like, watching them all, like, make emotional faces without actually hearing them talk.
Where it earns one of its stars.
And Ally Sheedy, like, she's just here to be here, right? She doesn't even have detention.
She doesn't have to be there, yeah,
she's, like, chose to come here. That's kind of funny. See, I think, like, he was sitting, and now he has to, like, lean so he doesn't seem as tall.
I mean, to make a movie that's a hit and appeals to kids and is people just sitting and talking mostly is really something.
Yeah.
What's coming in between, like, the, you know, these music breaks also, right? It's one of these 80s movies that has, like, a soundtrack that's notable, and it has these, like...
Sure, sure.
It's got one song that's super notable.
One for sure, but it is still, like...
With the Simple Minds song, which she wrote the lyrics to, actually, and sent them to have them write the song to it.
And the band was not all that into it. They're like, all right, but... Yeah.
That's a good song.
And I think Billy Idol was considered to be involved in doing the song or something, and he turned it down, something like that.
That would have been fine. That would have been almost the same universe if it was a Billy Idol song instead.
Yeah,
it does.
You can hear it. Yeah. Where do you place this for? Like, I assume you're weird Planes, Trains, and Automobiles all the way as far as this best movie, right? Is that where we're standing? Brandon, where do you put Breakfast Club?
Put it? Oh, I don't
rank think it right now. Do it.
I don't think about that with Johnny. I'm not doing. It's probably up there. I do like it quite a bit. I actually have liked it more as I've gotten older than when I was.
Me too.
When I was younger,
I'd say the same. Yeah,
I'm not indifferent to it, as some people might say, but I kept my copy.
So did I. I think it's the second best movie, pretty clearly.
It's probably one I can watch easier than a lot of the others. Are we talking just like his directorial ones? His
directorial ones, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's.
But I've come to appreciate him more in a lot of ways. I watched Christmas Vacation this year and didn't hate it like I usually do. I actually sort of enjoyed it, and Home Alone I've come around to really liking too. Amazingly enough, considering how much I dismissed it when it was a big hit, we watch it every year.
It's Williams doing heavy lifting.
It is John Williams doing a lot of the heavy lifting for sure. You're right, but I'm not someone who I don't think consider that dirty pool. I mean, the movie's the movie.
No, you're not. You're wrong. I like 2/3 of that movie. Fine.
You don't like the part the
I don't like the slapsticky stuff with the.
That had me laughing my ass off when I saw that. My kids are like, I was a kid.
Love that so much.
Dying.
Oh my god, no! I only like the first 2/3 of this movie.
I watched it this past Christmas, and I will say I was just like, I'm in the mood for this. I'm not enjoying this right now. This is fine.
You know, so like. We actually nailed when we were talking about this movie because it came out President's Day weekend.
Boom.
Back in 1985.
Oh, did it really?
Yeah. And it opened. I mean, the other new movie that weekend was Vision Quest.
In it.
So you have two massive songs representing movies.
Yeah.
And they have a wrestler in them.
What's the song in Vision Quest?
Crazy for You.
Crazy for You, Madonna.
That's a Vision Quest.
Yeah. All right. That's the best thing about Vision Quest.
Madonna's
in it singing the song.
Yeah, she's in it. I never saw
that. That was her big cinematic debut, I believe.
Before Desperately Seeking Susan, yeah.
Yeah. And it was, open number three behind Beverly Hills Cop.
Yeah, which was still
on its 11th weekend release at number one, and Witnessed in its second week of release.
Witness.
Yeah. So Killing Fields was in its 16th week, right behind it. Yeah.
Which one?
Tied with Vision Quest.
Oh, wow.
This dance sequence is originally just going to be Claire. And Molly Ringwald is like, this is embarrassing for just me to be dancing. And so John Hughes is like, all right, everybody can dance. How they got to this Bannister thing, I don't know, though, because it's ridiculous.
Yeah, Emilio and that air guitar. Mm-hmm. And this is the thing, like, kids will watch and be like, I just love the, a kid's dancing. Like, this is nonsense, but this really speaks to kids doing this stupid shit.
They're also all really good dancers. It's like they got footwork.
We used to be a society.
Repeated motif.
Got that wallet chain. Those came back in the 90s, too.
Well, a lot of people are losing wallets.
Well, you know what? If the guy pickpocketed you, you're like, got you.
Yeah, Bender's
always the guy that looks most like he's going to steal your wallet that has the wallet chain.
Or he'd hang out with his own. He'd hang out with his own. That's the thing.
It's a projection. That's what the wallet chain is. Breakfast Club is brought to you by Nike. Just do it.
Emilio just taking all the looks he can at Ally Sheedy when she's not looking. I think he's like purposely slouching. I think he's like actively grown at this point, and he's like he's trying to keep himself looking smaller than everybody else. Oh yeah, let's get that makeover in.
Here comes the film Twitter found it controversial many decades later moment that ruined the Breakfast Club forever.
The makeover?
Yep. I went nuts on this. One time some kid discovered, like, did you know? Did look at the... I'm like, I don't think anybody, like, fully agreed with it.
I would believe... I mean...
It was probably seen as like, why don't you do that at the time? I always remember watching
the popular
movie.
Girl wants to help make you pretty. I mean, shit, I'd go for it.
Or, you could look at it as like, oh, she never believed she had it in herself to be what she thought other, there's a whole lot of interpretations of it. There's no one, it's not necessarily saying like, oh, look, the goth is bad.
Right, it's the same thing that always happens with movies.
People are finding
the movie
themselves
saying
in high school,
that in every situation, this is the reaction. Should every girl who's not prettied up be prettied up? Is that what the movie's saying, or is it saying that these characters it makes sense for? And I think in the world of this movie, I buy, and I also buy that she would be interested in Judd Nelson even after he was sleazy with her, because he's obviously
it'll piss her dad off.
He's a fixer-upper. He's got a soul underneath that. I buy that a girl would be interested in him.
I can understand in the realm of this movie making certain choices. I do think it's the extent of how much they try to pretty up Ally Sheedy, where I'm like, that's a lot of business that they did with her. Like, she's got completely different clothes. She's got a fucking flower in her hair. Might as well be coming out of a fucking clamshell. Like, I mean, it's just they just go so far with it. Anthony Michael Hall is like, what? You're a person now?
He's like, where did you get those clothes?
Yeah. It's a look of betrayal. He's like, wait, you were like me.
I just turned it inside out. This is what was there.
You were like me. What are you doing?
This is like a Fresh Prince in his jacket. He turned it inside out. It looked even cooler.
He's the only one who's coming out of this attention without a girlfriend. Anthony Michael Hall. Everybody else is.
That's why he blows up the school next week.
That's right. Yeah.
He goes home, he furiously masturbates, comes back to school with dynamite.
I was going to say he leaves with his hand, but...
yeah. And memories of Molly Ringwald, which I'm sure he'll...
I mean, in the moderner version of the school, like, they'd go, the two women, they go in the back room and realize, ah, actually, Wilf don't like men at all. I mean, that's...
Yeah.
Let's swing around with something else.
And Judd Nelson's, like, all like that because he's, like, secretly been molested or, you know, something, you know.
Yeah, something wild. Emilio Estevez is like, actually, I want to be on.
I like men.
There would be a gay character for sure. Any time past 85, there would have been a gay character.
It's a Billy Elliot thing. He's like, I don't want to do rugby. I mean, it's all in positive ways, but it should be implied. But like, these are interesting choices. As it stands, what we're watching here is just all very, it's all very conservative stuff as far as, oh, all these people realize they like each other to want to form platonic families.
And we also forget she had super dandruff in her hair earlier.
Right.
Like, is that
probably was smelly.
Is dandruff too. Cool? Like, is
this movie over? We're like done?
Yeah. <we're leaving.
laughs> they get Anthony Michael Hall to write the essay for him. And
I guess we're done.
It down.
Not like today's 2 hour and 30 minute teen comedies. We
He wanted get in to be. Get the he initially out. Wanted to be. There's John Hughes, by the way. He wanted it to be long initially. It was a 150-page script. There's a lot of deleted material on the various. Look at these two. Mm-hmm. Oh, I can't believe we never knew each other before. Oh my God, jumping his bones. Just do it on the street, guys. Just get it out of the way.
Come to my wrestling match.
Yeah, come to my beat slam poetry contest. She get in the car. What'd she do? Who's that?
Emilio's dead.
That I mean, him questioning who's that? Who are you making out with? Emilio's dad looks totally like the dad of a football player, by the way. That looks like a guy that's running Friday Night Lights.
He's a wrestling.
He just been Martin Sheen.
Emilio's a wrestler,
sorry, wrestling,
right?
Wrestling. Yeah. I meant wrestling. Yeah, sorry.
There's my earring.
Hold on to that. I'm going to piss off my dad so much later. Ringwald did write an op-ed about the whole sexual taking advantage sequence with Bender under the desk and all that.
She's showing it to her kids. She says she had that reaction.
Yeah.
It didn't seem weird in the 80s is all I can say.
Sure. And like, and when she wrote it, like the tone of, cause I read a little, the tone of it's not like, I hate John Hughes now. It's just more of like, it's something to think about when you do, you know, look at these things a year later and you're a parent, which is, I think, a reasonable way to, you know, take on a thing that you're, you know, there's a legacy around the thing that you did.
How many jackets do you need in Shermer, Illinois?
He's wearing as many clothes as Gene Hackman is in Scarecrow. Vernon was based off of Hughes' own wrestling coach, actually, as well, who was a real tough guy. The coach saw the movie and is like, oh, good movie. The teacher was a real asshole, though. That was his reaction. Didn't quite see through it.
That looks like a real football, high school football field, too.
It very much is. It is the same exterior as the rest of the exteriors that they use for the school. The fist pump was like a number of different things they tried for the ending, and they just came up with that eventually.
A middle finger would have worked.
I guarantee that was one of the things they did. And they're like, I don't think Paramount's going to like us, or Universal's going to like us, ending the film with a freeze frame of a middle finger.
Yeah, it's better that he feels good about himself for a minute, which he probably did. I got a girl.
I got a girlfriend.
I'm
going to piss off her father. Then we're going to, you know, rob a bank and go to Anthony Michael Hall's place to hide. Catch him furiously masturbating before he blows up the school.
At this point in the chronology, my Hall's already home masturbating, I'm sure.
He started in the car, got in the back seat, he's trying to hide it.
It's crazy how like these credits are like really small in a corner. I wonder if anyone was like, man, what the fuck? Like, I want to see my name gloriously go up the screen, but
it's really hard to read these credits.
they're not there very long. Yeah.
This movie doesn't move by, I guess. I was like, oh, we're done.
Yeah,
it's 90 minutes.
Like, we're going Clueless next month. That's like 89 minutes without credits.
Not a goddamn epic like American Graffiti.
Yeah, it was like 100 an hour and 14 minutes or something. Yeah, an hour 44 minutes.
An afternoon in detention is way shorter than the last night.
Last night of high school, yeah.
That's kind of, we'll talk about Mean Girls eventually. That's kind of like tough on Mean Girls. Like, it takes too long. It feels like that movie needs to get done quicker. Yeah, the first print of this is 150 minutes long. I cut down a lot. I don't think I missed anything in the
too hot trivia. To hold.
But yeah, I know there was some question about Hughes being able to direct this, but when it was revealed that it was going to be like this chamber piece kind of thing set in one room, they're like, all right, we'll let you do it. We'll see what we can do. The fact that he got like Ferris Bueller at the same time and had already done Weird Science, it's like, I'm really fuzzy on like how this worked. I really want to like know more about this as far as what he's able to pull off. And like Planes, Trains is only, you know, 87. Like, and 16 Candles is 84. This is a quick turnaround for a lot of movies that he's responsible for, let alone writing all these other things at the same time.
Editing was a lot more active and labor intensive back then.
Anything else on Breakfast Club? We've gone through the movie at this point. All right. Well, great. We did it. We talked about The Breakfast Club. Yeah, that's going to bring us to the end of this commentary track for the month. Brandon, where can people find more of you online?
The Brandon Peters Show, which is thebrandonpetersshow.com. Anywhere podcasts are found. I also have a corresponding YouTube channel for that, where you can also find my Blu-ray and 4K reviews. And the documentary, Doctor on Display, the USA Tour, is now available on DVD and digital and rental from Real Time Pictures, which you can get those at timetraveltv.com.
Great. Yancey, anything you'd like to plug?
Oh, you know, Yancey Jack on X, Yancey Burns on Facebook, Yancey Burns on Instagram. You know, I'll be back around. You fine folks.
Very good. Everything I do can be found my personal Substack page, dakotazeek.substack.com. Of course, check out the other podcast I co-host called Two Black Guys Talk Godzilla, an award-winning show where we talk about the Godzilla movies in chronological order. I'm on all the socials at Aaron's PS4. This podcast will be about everywhere you can find podcasts, around all the socials and all that. You know where the show can be found. Next month, as I already explained, we're going to do Clueless, Amy Heckerling's Clueless, one of several teen Shakespeare movies of the 90s. Mm-hmm. What do we have? We had Romeo, Juliet, She's All That, Get Over It, 10 Things I Hate About You.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the most controversial of them all, because it had black people in the lead.
I liked Oh.
Oh's good. Oh's really good. Yeah, Oh is good. It's a really good movie. But no, it'd be like because of the timing of Columbine and all that. That was the reason. But it ain't no movie. There's no Mekhi Phifer. That's what I say. But yeah, this has been our commentary for Breakfast Club. Thank you, guys. Thank you, Brandon. Thank you, Yancey, for joining me for this.
Of course.
Thank you.
This has been quite fun. I look forward to continuing on with our Teenage Wasteland commentary marathon. But until then, until next month, that's gonna do it. So long and goodbye.
Won't you come see about me? I'll be alone, dancing, you know it, baby. Tell me your troubles and doubts, giving everything inside. Love strange, so real and dark. Think of the tender things that we were working on. Slow change may pull us apart. When a light gets in your heart, baby, don't you forget about me. Stand above.